This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, Julian Ng and Ibrahim Saini. 8:48. Right now, we're taking a look at the biggest business news of the day. Top Glove has received the conditional approval from Singapore Exchange for its proposed secondary listing on the SGX main board. So I guess now they would be looking at a dual listing in Malaysia and in Singapore.
So I'm just wondering why they're doing this, because it really puzzles me. Malaysia and Singapore are in the same time zone, and the same investors have equal access both into Malaysia and Singapore. Does this imply that there are differences in governance standards, or that certain investors in Singapore are cleverer at seeing the issues? I'm just wondering what the pool of Singapore is.
Yeah, and I think the bigger question on why list on the SGX is that they propose a secondary listing because they say that they could enhance its investor reach and they want to diversify their investor base. But again, you can also do this in Malaysia. So
you can.
So
you can,
their
absolutely.
Stated reasons do not tally with the said goals.
So I believe under the proposal, Top Glove said it's not going to be issuing any additional shares, right? So existing shareholders of Top Glove in Malaysia can opt to transfer the shares to the SGX listing. But what does this mean for investors in Singapore? If you look at the Singapore market, how many rubber glove companies are there? I think for the moment, investors in Singapore get choices of two rubber glove companies, Riverstone and UG Health Corporation. So perhaps having access to Top Glove, which is one of the world's biggest, if not the world's biggest rubber glove maker, could be a good thing for Singapore investors.
But I think that may be a slight benefit. And of course, Singapore is a financial center with a lot of wealth management clients. So it does make it a lot easier if you can trade it in Sing dollars. But, you know, this is a day and age of technology. I mean, you can book a car somewhere, arriving at your doorstep, and the car will take you to some other place in a short moment. Why can't you just press a button and execute that trade, convert your Sing dollars to buy into a Malaysian stock?
Then is cost a consideration, perhaps, the transaction cost of buying stocks in, Malaysian stocks in Singapore, etc.?
If you had an online broking account today with one of the major banks in Malaysia, you can buy any trade in Hong Kong, Singapore, Thailand, Indonesia, US, Europe for something around the lines of 0.2-0.3% brokerage fee. So if a retailer can do that, so much more with these more well-funded, better accessed investment banks.
So what is it? Visibility? I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Yeah. Well, it's hard.
Following back to what Singapore is in Asia, is that, Julian, you were mentioning that they are a wealth management hub in Asia. That's true. Maybe because Singapore is also one of the world's, Asia's largest foreign exchange trading center and active commodity trading center. They want to be closer to where the trading action is. Again, take it with a pinch of salt, because you can also do that here in Malaysia. But maybe access to international funds could be seen as one of the reasons, because it is an international exchange center.
I'm just wondering whether it gives you that reputational edge if you're listed in Singapore. Do they have a perception that Singapore has higher corporate governance standards, so that listing there would discipline you up to those kind of standards? If you look at Singapore, it's a pretty significant that almost 40% of listed companies there are non-Singapore. So
yeah.
A lot of companies that do want to list there, but they consist of countries that are from different time zones. So if you want to keep that trading going, then you list there so that your stock keeps trading, right? Two-thirds of them are from, of these non-Singaporean companies are from China. There are companies from Korea, Europe, Australia, US, Japan, and so on.
You know, even though nearly 40% of Singaporean companies listed are not from Singapore, over 85% of those listed are still in the same time zone. China shares the same time zone as Singapore. Southeast Asia, including Malaysia, shares the same time zone as Singapore. That means almost 85 to 90% of all Singapore listed companies share the same time zone. So well, I guess time zone is not part of the thing.
They call the S chips, right? The Chinese companies that are listed in Singapore call the S chips. And the huge mega companies are either listed in China, Hong Kong, or New York.
Mm.
But why do these small companies go to China? And a few of them have made their way into Malaysia, being dubbed the M chips, right? Mm-hmm. So these are very much different companies, very much smaller companies that perhaps want to get the kind of visibility that you might not get in huge concentrated markets like Hong Kong and China.
8:53 right now, the Malaysian retail industry recorded a 4.4% fall in sales in the first quarter of 2016. The fall, according to the Retail Association, is that it was attributed to the higher pre-GST sales last year, as well as weak Chinese New Year sales in February.
If you think of a country that is trying to transform itself to a kind of service economy, negative growth or a fall in the retail sector would be something that's quite worrying for policymakers, because a big chunk of the GDP would depend on the service economy. And I don't think that I'm quite skeptical to just blame it solely on the GST. The GST does affect sentiment, but I guess it's the larger trend in economic sentiment that is driving down this kind of growth. I mean, look at digging down into some of the more detailed numbers. Supermarkets and department stores are falling about 7% in April, and hypermarkets are falling about 4%.
So this Retailers Association, they expect their businesses to be returning back to the black in the second quarter of 2016, which is right now. But I don't know. I think there are seasonal aspects to it, including Chinese New Year sales, including Raya sales. Could this be weak sentiment where we would see weak Chinese New Year sales and also weak Raya sales coming forward?
You know, I think there was a lot of kind of look at the retail sector following GST. But the question is, how long does it take for people to get comfortable with GST and for sentiment to return?
It's over a year.
Yeah. It's been over a year. And the outlook is, you know, according to some reports, that it's going to get better at the end of the year. So the fact that it hasn't actually gotten better now shows that it's more than just the GST. There's something else impacting consumer sentiment, especially in the retail sector.
I think it's global, right? We're seeing inflation fall in all parts of the world. China is the latest country that has reported that they have not been able to keep to their 3% target. They are 2.something% right now, and they're throwing a lot of money into the economy to really make people spend. But a lot of that money is going into financial assets, not necessarily to the real economy.
Do you think that there's you know, looking at the department store subsector, which recorded negative growth, do you think that could have been e-commerce, you know, the impact of buying, shopping online rather than brick and mortar?
Could be.
And the easiest way to verify this is on a quick check with the logistics companies and whether or not they do see pickup in terms of logistics. In fact, we're going to get a logistics company over a Maersk Group, which is called Damco. And I think this would be one of the core questions for me to ask them, whether or not, you know, we're blindsided by online merchants and whether or not they're taking away businesses from established businesses from supermarkets.
Yeah, the other thing that you can do is really go to the malls and check out what people are doing, right? Just doing your own independent research and standing at the malls and seeing all these crowds. Maybe they're just hanging around in crowds and not actually buying things. You know, you go on a Saturday and outside of Wanatama is so hard to get in because you got to brave through the jams. And once you get in, you got to look for a parking. And that is evidence that people are actually going to the malls, but are they spending, right? You go to IKEA either on a public holiday or on a weekend, even on a normal day. Sometimes I try to, you know, be smart and avoid the crowds and go at, you know, they have late shopping there.
Uh-huh.
And it's crowded.
It still is crowded. I know what you mean. But speaking about IKEA, the CEO expects the group to grow sales about 8 to 10% in the current financial year. They want to hit a target of 50 billion euros by 2020.
This is, I guess, the revolution that is brought about by quick retailing, fast retailing. I don't think there is a loss of prestige in going to IKEA. I think people are okay going to IKEA, putting IKEA furniture into their homes. And when you see countries like China building properties at record rates, you need to furnish those properties. And IKEA is one, in one of those categories where the designs are very neutral, so it doesn't look out of place in your home. Just like if you wore Uniqlo or if you bought something from Muji, right? It really frees up your wallet for other things like experiences and so on. And it's the same with Uber and Airbnb. Uber really displaces the need to buy a car. Airbnb, you know, you don't have to stay in a hotel now. You want to focus on the real travel without having to spend a lot of money on hotels.
You know, I also came across a report about IKEA, a news report about IKEA moving into the online business. So they were apparently quite late to the e-commerce game, so they were quite late to adopt it. But now in more developed markets where they just don't have the option of building mega IKEA stores, they don't have that land, they have land constraints, they're opting for smaller city stores, but online shopping. So you buy what you need and you pick up at the smaller urban stores.
That makes a lot of sense.
And I don't know why they haven't rolled this out yet.
In fact, IKEA has that tagline, IKEA is big on small spaces. And I think this whole focus of rural to urban migration, declining fertility rates, many of these macroeconomic stuff. Yeah, expensive homes. They need to furnish small spaces. And when they marry that with the e-commerce facilities, they have that IKEA app. I have an IKEA app on my phone, and we can actually see even quantity of the stock left in the store. That's fantastic.
I mean, this sounds like a promotion, but actually it's not. It's a major trend in the world as to how you can make your buck going last longer.
Yeah, for sure. Very quickly, Maybank, they're ranking in Forbes annual global 2000 list of biggest public companies, have improved this year. So they moved up 9 notches from 362 from 371.
Well, Maybank is one of the biggest companies in the world. They recently have that management changes this week. Mm-hmm. And I think Maybank will be poised for further growth this year.
Tanaga also was in the top 500 of that list.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.